minus three with Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, sports fans, and happy anniversary to everyone at Extra Points, including you, Eddie Spaghetti. I know you're a latecomer to the network here, but mazel tov to Cousin Sal and the boss man, Toby, everybody else on down. But great thanks. I don't think we really started cooking with gas until the arrival of one Eddie Spaghetti. Quite a thing. I say it all the time. And it doesn't make a difference if it's talking into a microphone and flapping your gums about sports and ranking fruit, or if you work in a bank, or whatever it is you do. If you get to do it with your pals, you're cheating life. And so we're officially cheating life, Eddie Spaghetti. Let's just chop up sports a little bit here. We're kind of in full disclosure, no jive. We pull back the curtain here on the program. And here on Minus Three today, we're recording a few days ahead of schedule because we are off to go and celebrate with our big toe. What did I call him a couple weeks ago? I can't remember what I tried to call him, but we'll call him our big toe. Cousin Sal is celebrating his 50th birthday, so we're looking forward to joining him and doing all that. And we're also looking forward to some football action. Spaghetti, it's one day closer. Actually, if you're listening now, you who's listening, you're a couple of days closer to football than me and Spaghetti are having this conversation right now. We may be joined by a guest to talk about football and the game of life. But in the meantime, Eddie Spaghetti, how are you?
I'm good. I am very excited for our Vegas trip, not only to just be in Las Vegas and to partake in activities there, but to finally meet most of the staff, because everything has been very virtual. So really, outside of you, I don't think I've met a single other employee. And Martin, you and Martin are the only two people I've met in person at Extra Points. But and also, yes, mazel tov to 1 year anniversary of Extra Points. Great network. Very happy to be here. But yes, it'll be a very, very fun weekend for all of us.
And listen, you know, again, abiding by the no jive policy, I love basketball. I love, love, love hockey. I love the college sports, baseball. Okay. That's also a sport, as are the Olympics, a gaggle of sports. But no jive, football is where it's at. You know, that's the main event for us. And so we're very excited about that coming up here. And at the time of this recording, it does sound like Aaron Rodgers is going to play at least one more year with the Green Bay Packers. We'll see where he is in 2022. And Deshaun Watson is out there. There are at least rumors, or I think it's confirmed that the Texans are not willing to trade him. The issue is, who's going to take him? By the time you're listening to this, perhaps he has been traded. As they say, you know, people always, when anything gets sideways for a player, it's always announced, well, that's it for that guy. Who's ever going to touch that guy again? If he can still play, there will always be somebody who's willing to go out and get him. In this case, though, how much are you willing to give up for a guy whose future is so uncertain? You don't know in the short term. Are you going to give up first-round draft picks for a guy who might be shelved, for all we know, for half the 2021 season? I don't know. I don't want to talk about that. You know what? I want to go through, because it's worth going through over and over again in this reporter's opinion, the season win totals, who you think is going to win, and those can change all through the month of August as we don't consume, unlike the rubes out there. You probably will watch preseason football, but remember, it's a Civil War reenactment. It only looks real. None of it applies to what you're going to see in September and beyond. It's an audition for borderline guys. I don't know why anybody would ever put any relevant player out on it, why any coach or GM would allow anybody who he expects to produce in the regular season, why you would risk injury in these Civil War reenactments. So I avoid those because they only trick your brain. I just am going to ride with what I already know about these things as we move forward quickly, though. To start it off, Eddie Spaghetti, what would be your walk-up song if you were a big league ball player?
Oh, that's a good one. I think you want something with a good, fast intro that gets people going. I would, you know what's a good one? Bob O'Reilly by The Who, I think, is a good one. I think
really? Wow, yeah. That's a surprising, I can't believe it's not Pearl Jam.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a Pearl Jam song that's good for walk-up music. Like, Baba just has, like, that intro, obviously, is iconic, and it gets, if you hear it, you just automatically want to start getting up and dancing, and it feels like it's energetic. So, I would go, I mean, I love The Who. Quadrophenia is one of my favorite albums ever, so I'm okay with picking a song by The Who.
But wouldn't their most famous song be a good one to walk up to? Because it's like a start of something. It doesn't. They're not going to join during the chorus, right? So it's like
I don't know. I wouldn't pick. I don't know. The most iconic intro for a Pearl Jam song is probably Jeremy. I'm not going to pick Jeremy as a walk up song because that's sending the wrong message. So I think
would send a weird message. I think what about something from Bad Motorfinger? Soundgarden would be.
Soundgarden's a lot of good ones. Rusty Cage, there's a couple good intros to that that are hard. But I think Baba is still a good pick. It's one of the best songs I've ever heard, and I think that like that intro it's a song that's more, it's popular enough that a large gap of people will understand and hear it. Soundgarden's like, oh, what is this? Like, a lot of people may not know it's a little heavier metal kind of, so I think Baba is a crowd pleaser.
I think, see, to me, you want to take advantage of it. Yeah, you can be cute and vain and like, this is the kind of music I'm into, everybody, and if this music appeals to you, you should you should like me and buy my jerseys and all that kind of stuff. To me, I would use it as a chance to psychologically get one over on the pitcher that I was facing. You know, I would maybe try to duet them kind of thing. Like I'd maybe have them play the Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper song from what's it called, from that movie, you know, like,
yeah,
I would just like, the music would come on. And I'd be like, tell me something, boy. Aren't you tired trying to fill that void? But I would be like, but I would make sure I'd step out of the batter's box. I'd be like, time ump. And I'd be like, you don't bring me flowers. And then like, he'd be spooked, you know? He would think like, this guy might be in love with me. Then he would throw the ball. He would try to bean you in the head. And then guess what? You're a base runner, and you're on. You're going the 90 feet to first base.
I weirdly think that's a good picking. Shallow from A Star Is Born, I think, is actually a pretty good answer, because it would make the pitcher laugh, and like, they would be thrown off their game, and you would have the advantage.
But maybe it would. You know what? Maybe it would turn into an actual duet. You know, maybe it would just turn into a thing with me and the pitcher just singing out there like. I'm on the deep end. Like, you be the pitcher, Spaghetti. Please. Look at you. I'm on the deep end. Watch as I dive in. I'll never leave the ground. Cause we'll fall in if I am ballin'. I'm following the shallow now. Then he would bean me, and then I would take the base. And now I'm a threat on the base paths, too, as you know, with my speed. Maybe it's not the speed, but I have the cunning of a mongoose, and that'll be enough to get me into scoring position. Next thing you know, I'm crossing home plate, getting high fives, and the pitcher's thinking, what happened there? I just got gaga'd, you know? Anyhow, Kanye West is living in, apparently, in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta.
Yes.
That's all the vogue with people now. Trump lives in a golf course, and Kanye West lives in a stadium. Eddie Spaghetti, where would you like to live? What stadium would you like to live in?
So, thinking about this, the best stadium experience I've had, it was San Francisco Giants Stadium, which they changed the name constantly. I remember it used to be like Pac Bell and it used to be AT&T. That was the best experience, but it gets too cold there and it gets foggy. So I'm trying to think of a stadium that I'm familiar with. And years back, when we went to the Combine for NFL, I spent quite many days inside Lucas Oil. And I know the every inch of that stadium. And so just for the fact that I know how to navigate the stadium, that's going to be my pick. It's a boring pick. Why are you picking Indianapolis? But the answer is because I would feel comfortable because I'm like, oh, okay, I've been here. If I had picked a stadium I've never been to, it's this humongous cavernous thing where you don't know where to go, like where the exits, where the, like the best food spots, like at least Lucas Oil, it's like, okay, I know where the bottom, like the locker rooms are. I know where the owner's booths are. I know where the good food spots are. Like, I feel comfortable there. I've been every part of that stadium, and that, even more so than MetLife or Giants Stadium or Yankee Stadium or anything else. So I would probably pick there. Actually, what am I saying? I'm just going to pick Madison Square Garden.
Hey, Bob, that's exactly yeah, right. Yeah. What's wrong with
As
you?
I'm talking about it, yeah, just pick MSG. Yeah, MSG is iconic. It's the best thing ever. So MSG is the answer. Sorry. Sorry, forget the whole Lucas Oil thing.
Well, you know, yeah, this is in this thought experiment. I guess there are some rules. Like, if you're Kanye West, you probably just don't walk out and like, I'm going to go find something to eat. Because if you're Kanye West, you can't just go walk and mill around, or dozens of people will pounce within 30 seconds and want autographs and otherwise. Also, if you live there, I assume you have a luxury box, and then the games are a factor. So right now, I would want Wrigley, unless I wanted to sleep a lot, because then it'd be like, wow, it's these people making a racket out there while I'm trying to take a midday nap, you know, playing baseball out on the field. Will you keep it down out there? Kind of thing might happen. But I think Wrigley would be good because there's a game every day to watch. And you could conceivably walk out of the stadium to any number of bars and food places. I think that remains the most practical. MSG is pretty good in that regard, too.
Yeah, I'd hang out on the Chase Bridge. Hopefully they don't have the ice up. It's the hardwood, so I could shoot some hoops, you know, because I'm also picturing when people are gone, like at nighttime when it's an empty stadium. It's just me.
Oh, nice, yeah.
So it's like I could turn the theater lighting on. I could shoot some hoops. I could, you know, walk around the stadium, look at all the, you know, the pictures of all the famous concerts that were there. And
nice.
The food options are right there, and it's remodeled MSG, so I think I'd be okay. So I think that's
what it comes down to, is what stadium has the best food. That's who are we kidding? You and me, Eddie Spaghetti. That would be the final choice. Like, if you have the run of the food options there, as far as that goes, the new stadium in Los Angeles, that place has a lot of good food joints in it. That, by the way, reminder, remains my Super Bowl pick, Aaron Rodgers, back or not. I do think now, if Rodgers is playing, I think realistically, with the melodrama, if we are going to, for this conversation, put that in the rearview mirror here, Eddie Spaghetti, are the Packers then the team to beat in the NFC? Because what I was going to say is I think SoFi Stadium, which is hosting the Super Bowl, is going to have both home teams playing in it against one another in that Super Bowl. I know Cam Akers is out. Spoiler alert, other teams are going to have injuries to key players before the regular season kicks off. So they're just the first in this sad reality of the way things are going to break. I'm not going to write off the Rams because of the injury. But it does complicate matters because now there's a legit team that was pretty close to getting to the Super Bowl last year. How say you?
Yeah, I mean, I thought the entire time that he was never leaving. So in my head, I was always Packers are going to win the NFC North. Packers are going to be in the conversation to advance to the Super Bowl. How many teams I think will be in the mix, 3-4-ish, how it always shakes out. But I was trying to think it too as a fan of the Giants, and bring us back to our East, and they have the Giants have the Bears pick, and I'm thinking, will the Bears be more likely to play Justin Fields with Aaron Rodgers and the Packers or without it? I'm trying to think, like, oh, the Bears think they have a shot to win the division. They may stick with Foles, the veteran. If Rodgers is playing and they're out of it, they may give Fields more time.
Well, no, it's Dalton. They've already said it's going to be Dalton.
Sorry, I know I said Foles. With Dalton, with the veteran presence, I'm like, instead of playing Justin Fields. But that's what I was thinking back to. But anyway, back to the Packers. I mean, if they figure out Rodgers, then next comes Devontae Adams. They will find a way to keep Devontae Adams there. They're not going to – Rodgers won't come back if he knows Devontae Adams is leaving. There's just no way it's happening. And, yeah, they're still
a good team. Although that would be great.
If Adams leaves for Vegas to go reunite with Derek Carr, and Rodgers comes back and he's like, "Oh, now he literally has nobody." But like I said, it's his final year with the Packers. They'll move him next year. Jordan Love starts next season, and I think as constituted, they're a pretty good roster. And you could say what you want about what the Packers have done for Rodgers at the pass catching part of the game, but they have drafted some fairly good players, especially on the defensive side of the football. So they're always going to be in the mix, the Packers.
I'm almost surprised Aaron Jones is back, and that they made that something that was important to them with A.J. Dillon sitting there. And the thing that's got to be vexing, and it was true a year ago with all the stuff about Aaron Rodgers wasn't informed, and I completely get it. The idea that the Packers were unaware that this might put off their star quarterback, their franchise quarterback, of course, they were in the wrong on that one. Now, how far Aaron Rodgers chose to take this thing is another matter, but I completely get it. And to express any level of surprise or being miffed at how could Aaron Rodgers do this, the issue was, and it went all the way through the title game, and even after it, you could say, if instead of drafting Jordan Love, if you drafted a receiver or a piece that was valuable to the 2020 campaign for the Packers, would that have been enough to get them past Brady's Buccaneers? We'll never know. That same dynamic exists as you go into this season. Even if it is, this is it with Aaron Rodgers, we're going to take one last run at it, last dance and all of that. You still wonder, you could have traded Jordan Love this offseason and kept Aaron Rodgers for the next couple or few years. That probably, what do I know? But I don't know what's in Aaron Rodgers' head, but it sort of makes sense that if he was miffed about them taking Love instead of a receiver that he liked, the way to make that right is to trade Jordan Love to a team needing a quarterback and get a wide receiver or a pass-catching tight end in return. That seems like the obvious solution, and they're not going to do that. So then the same dynamic exists all through the year for Rodgers and for Packers fans at large is, what could Jordan Love have been turned into? And as it also stands, with Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon, Rodgers at this point in his career, obviously a dynamic playmaker and everything, but they could be as ground heavy as anybody in the league if they choose to be. It could be very much what Tom Brady was in long stretches last year, what you might see in Pittsburgh this year with Roethlisberger, future Hall of Famer at QB, but mainly he is the passenger turning around and handing the ball off, asked to make a couple of big throws or a few big throws over the course of the game. But I think the Packers really kind of spooked me on my Rams to the Super Bowl pick, because there are very few teams that really I could make much of a case for. The Niners are interesting. The Bucs still sit at plus 280 as the best team to win the AFC. And those are pretty good odds given really at plus 280, they're the reigning Super Bowl champs. You have at the helm a 7-time Super Bowl champion at the most important position. That feels a little undervalued, as a matter of fact, and it's owed to our ongoing cynicism that at some point this can't continue for Tom Brady. To get to the Super Bowl, the Rams are plus 650, though. Packers are plus 700. I think that's a great bet, and that's going to probably drop as things solidify with Rodgers' return. I think the Packers are a good one to jump on, too, if you ain't down with my Rams thought. And then after that, it really gets murky. Seahawks, an incomplete feeling roster, at least at plus 1100. And then it really starts to get loose. What really jumps out to me above everything else is the NFC East's best odds are on the Cowboys at plus 1500 down there with the Vikings and the Jameis/Taysom Saints. I go Packers there or the Rams would be my two bets there. And yet I just point out to you that if you are a Brady believer at age 43, plus 270. But that's the thing about Brady's entire career, whether it's in Tampa or New England. And I thought it was a product of the Belichick philosophy of just, we got to make one. They're going to screw up one time, and that'll be the margin of victory for the Patriots. And it's hard to argue that that wasn't a winning formula. When you look at the Patriots dynasty or whatever else you want to call it, almost every game is a one-score game. I mean, go back through the playoffs, certainly the Super Bowls. Very few games are double-digit margins of victory. And so it was, again, with Tampa Bay. It felt like through these play, I felt like, man, they could have lost that game if the one play went the other way. I don't know what magic Brady possesses or to what it's owed, but at plus 270, that feels juicy.
Dun, dun, da, dun, dun.
That's right. We're back on board with Team USA men's basketball. They gave what for to Iran? Okay, Eddie Spaghetti and I took Iran and all those points, but that's just because we were trying to inspire Coach Pop's gang. Mission accomplished. Now we're on board with the men's basketball team, like I say, laying 22.5 versus the Czech Republic on Saturday. Join us, won't you? FanDuel.com/-3 is how you do it. The word minus, the number 3. And FanDuel Sportsbook is hooking up new users with an epic Olympic bonus. Just place your first bet of at least $10 on any Olympic sport and get a $100 bonus. Bet at least $20 and you'll get a $200 bonus. That's a bonus up to $200 regardless of the outcome of the bet. To get you started, like I say, Spaghetti and I are both waving the flag, red, white, and blue all the way. USA men's basketball to win, laying 22.5 against the Czech Republic. Remember, you'll get the bonus on any Olympic event and you don't have to bet on the men's basketball team. It's on any Olympic event. Like I say, baseball, soccer, track and field. Those are some other sports as examples. Promotions like this are just one of the reasons I love betting on America's number one sports book. Easy to use. It's safe and secure. Fast payouts and fun opportunities like the one I just described. So like I say, join me and Eddie Spaghetti and anyone who wants to wave the red, white, and blue a little bit as we watch these Olympics. Do it, FanDuel.com/-3, the word minus, the number 3. Uncle Sam and Dave want you to join us.
All right, Spaghettes, let's do, should we do, do you prefer to do win totals or do you want to do division winners? So you know what? Let's revisit it again. I'll answer the question for you. Dallas Cowboys, total is 9.5 over and under available at -110. How say you?
This is the one I struggle with because I don't know if I want to be the, like, I'll get accused of being a homer by wanting to pick the Giants to win the division, and that means they're going to be better than the Cowboys, but I've been on the Dak train for quite some time. I think the Cowboys will win over 9.5 games. I think they will get through the 10-win mark. I think Dak will be in the running for MVP, and I think that just the offense along with the weapons they have and him being fully healthy, if he's fully healthy, obviously, then they'll be that good. And I think, you know, this may be a hot take, but I don't get the whole Zeke Elliott coming into camp at the weight like that he is at. That should be applauded because, you know, he was like, they're like, oh, he's the lightest he's been since he was a freshman at Ohio State. It's like, well, don't players notoriously lose weight as the season goes on? Like, you want your running back to be less durable and less, like, you know, more prone to getting hits. So basically my point is that I think that the team goes as far as Dak goes. I think Dak will have a fantastic season, but I think that their major flaws, especially on the defensive side of the football, and if they can't run the football, will cost them. But I think that should be okay to get. And a 17-game season, they could easily get to 10 victories.
Yeah, that is something that you do want to keep reminding yourself of. It's a 17-game schedule. Cowboys, I don't love the top-to-bottom roster. I do think Dan Quinn provides a bump for that defense, and the offense should be borderline unstoppable because the offensive line, the thing that everybody pointed to, which then got to be an antiquated point, people were saying, well, they're the best offensive line in football. It's like, are you paying attention to who's out there for the Dallas Cowboys? I know it's an easy thing to throw out. Best offensive line in football, not with the injuries and the departures for the people not paying attention. And whether or not I am a huge Zeke Elliott guy, maybe he has Fountain of Youth stuff going on for one more year. But as we've said ad nauseum, it's diminishing returns with a running back in the NFL. And at this stage in his career, it's a little optimistic to expect to be able to just lean on that guy, although they do have some other options to hand the ball off there, too. It's more about Dak and the weapons he has to throw the ball to. I'm going to go barely over 9.5 wins at 10 there. Let's do your New York Giants, though. And it does matter to not just let it sit in a vacuum and expect what, you know, you hit on the right point there. Obviously, whether you're a Cowboys fan or an Eagles fan or a Washington fan, the head-to-heads and how you think those are going to play out should swing the way you make these bets here, I would think. So the Giants sitting there at 7 over -125, go under at +105. I know where you're going here, Eddie Spaghetti, but explain why you're going over.
Yeah, well, to start with the in-division games, having 6 games, you know, 2 versus the Cowboys, 2 versus Washington, 2 versus Philly, I would expect at least 4 wins out of those 6. You know, I don't know if they're going to either sweep. I would expect sweeping the Eagles. I think it has to happen. I think the Eagles are clearly the worst team in the division. I know Fitzpatrick's coming out saying this is by far the best situation he's been in as being the guy. I mean, I don't know. It's offseason talk. I get their defense is loaded up front and people like them. I personally think the Giants have a better overall defense than what WFT has this upcoming season because of Patrick Graham, because of the insane depth they have at the secondary, and because of what they did in the draft, getting Ojulari and getting Lorenzo Carter back from injury, I think is a huge, huge upgrade. And their D-line does pretty good depth, too, even if they did lose Dalvin Tomlinson. So I like the Giants' defensive unit more than the WFT's defensive unit. And I just don't buy Fitzpatrick being a guy to you know, really, when it matters, to make, you know, to lead them to victory. So I see the Giants potentially sweeping them as well. And then I'll say it's a coin flip between Dallas. You know, they may win their home game, the Giants win their home game, and then they split. So that alone helps them. Week one would also help them. No Aaron Rodgers for the Denver Broncos. If he's staying with the Packers, I think that's an easily winnable game for the Giants. There's a few other games that I would expect them to win as well. So, you know, it's a 17-game season, over under 7, if Daniel Jones is league average. If he's number 16 out of 32 quarterbacks, that's more than enough for them to get by 7 wins, especially with Saquon Barkley coming back and the weapons they have at receiver. Yes, I know Kadarius Toney was put on the COVID list, but I think he'll be okay when you know, preseason rolls around here, and having Kenny Galladay, a big body target, Sterling Shepard's as good as it gets in the slot, and then, oh, by the way, Daniel Jones' favorite target, Darius Slayton, like, who's going to cover him? Like, there's so many weapons there. Kyle Rudolph to help out Evan Ingram at the tight end position massively, plus in the blocking scheme for Saquon. You know, the Giants haven't had all last year those 70-yard runs from Saquon that he just breaks loose. They're going to have that again now this year. And the other thing, too, is I know that I preach this and people don't believe it, but having continuity with your offense, with your offensive coordinator, with your head coach, with, you know, that goes a long way, especially in last year's weird COVID offseason. They switched from going from Pat Shurmur to now a team coached by Joe Judge and having Jason Garrett there. I'm hoping, crossing my fingers, that Freddie Kitchens is more involved in the offensive play calling. And also with offensive line of the year in the books for Andrew Thomas, who was a lot better in the second half of the season, getting Nate Solder back, whether that's for right tackle or for depth, either way, that's going to help. Like, all these things are positives, and I think, like I said, if he's number 16 out of 32, that is more than enough to get the Giants to over 7 wins. So I think, without a doubt, bet on the Giants. It's not me being a homer. It's just me being a logical football fan.
Well, you are a homer. I know you say you're not being a homer, but I'm more of a homer than I am, even though you accuse me of being a homer.
That is not true. I'm critical of the Giants. I've predicted the Giants.
I'm critical of my team.
You said they're better than like the Ravens and Browns, and they're going to win all these.
That's a complete misrepresentation.
Me saying the Giants winning over 7 games is not a homer.
Don't make stuff up. Don't make stuff up. I didn't say that the Steelers are going to be better than the Browns. I said the Browns are going to be the team to beat in the AFC North this year. What I did say is that the Steelers will finish with a better record than the Ravens. And that's a bold take. That counts as a bold take, given where everybody expects the Steelers to fall with their quarterback, and the assumption that Ravens offense doesn't skip a beat despite the losses and the question marks on the offensive line and in the front 7. Now, if they get Chandler Jones, that can swing a division. If the Ravens could make a deal, and maybe they have by the time you're listening to this, if they could get Chandler Jones, then sure, that would change things. But as it stands, they're long in the tooth in their defensive front, and they have questions on the offensive line, and that offense just can't go if that isn't a high-end O-line. So we'll see there. But that's not the division we're talking about right now, Eddie Spaghetti. To your point, and I'm with you about Washington, what does Fitzmagic typically do? I am very skeptical, and it's easy to be skeptical because all you have to do is look at the chances that Ryan Fitzpatrick has had when he has the full reins for the full season. He tends to fall apart about halfway through things, but he does come out of the gate strong. So that's the real question. They start things off with the Chargers. I love the Chargers this year. I think they're going to be the best team when it's all said and done. I think that's going to be the best team in a loaded AFC. So obviously, I'm going to take the Chargers going into our nation's capital to steal a win there. Then they have your Giants. Then they're at Buffalo, Washington is. And I don't love going through the schedule and predicating how what their win total is going to be based on the strength of schedule on last year. Injuries, the fluctuation year to year of most pro football teams is very different than any other sport. Play that game of like going through the schedule to determine how many games your team's going to win with other sports. In pro football, it really doesn't apply, the strength of schedule from last year. I'm saying that anecdotally. Maybe somebody can disprove me that when you have the toughest schedule in the league going into the year based on the previous season's results that you are negatively impacted by that. I generally think that the thing fluctuates year to year, and then even within the season, what looks like a scary matchup as a, for instance, let's say at Green Bay in late October is scary now, but we don't know what Green Bay is going to look like by then. Maybe things will implode. Maybe Aaron Rodgers and Gutekunst will have a fight in the bowels of Lambeau, and everything will go south for them. So anyway, I don't want to make too much about what their schedule looks like, but just coming out of the gate, does the schedule provide an opportunity for him to get off to his typical fast start? Chargers, Giants, at Buffalo, at Atlanta, New Orleans, Chiefs at Green Bay. That doesn't sound like a team that's, 6-1 6 weeks into the season. I do love what they have defensively. I love the young talent that they have defensively. But yeah, I'm not crazy with Washington, and I think the Eagles are going to be bad. So then that boosts your team, the Giants' chances. Ergo, all that being said, I'm going over 7 for your team. Congratulations, Eddie Spaghetti. You did it.
Thank you. And yeah, just to add my quick take on Washington, I think they're a 7 or 8 win team, which puts them underneath 8.5, which is what FanDuel has them set at. Problems in the offensive line, losing Morgan Moses. They're really the only mainstay they've had there is Brandon Scherff at right guard. And their secondary, I know they took Landon Collins from the Giants, but by the way, not a great pass coverage safety. Giants secondary looks a little bit better. So those teams are the two closest. I think those things edge out the Giants just a little bit more than WFT. And yeah, I agree. The Eagles are they're trash, totally garbage team. So under whatever they have.
I'll convert. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm going to go barely under. I'm going to go Washington at 8 wins because the defense is too talented. And they did add some nice pieces. I just don't like the I know it makes me a curmudgeon. The Fitzmagic thing is cute. I don't think it's a path to success. And Heinicke, are they going to go to him? They have not a great quarterback room in a quarterback league. That probably is their undoing.
Especially with good weapons. Having Logan Thomas and Curtis Samuel, Terry McLaurin, Antonio Gibson's not bad. It's just like you said, problem at O-line, problem at the quarterback is that's their downfall.
Yeah, exactly. And Philadelphia is their win total seems lofty to me at 6.5. Little too rich. -150 if you want to go over, go under at +125. That's the bet to me. I think Jalen Hurts is not a long-term answer. They have a lot of question marks. The secondary beefed up a little bit, but the offensive line, which a lot of their success in the last half decade has been based around as a question mark. The defensive front, still good, but, some of the pieces there, some of the more valuable pieces getting a little long or have been around for maybe a little bit too long. And I generally say veteran leadership and all that stuff is nice. Give me the youth. And I think that the Giants and Gettleman deserves all the junk he's gotten. The big mistake was the biggest mistake was Saquon. The second biggest mistake was Dimes, only because it's not diminishing Dimes. It's just that there were other options. There would have been other options that probably present as an upgrade from Danny Dimes. That being said, if the offensive line is good enough and then Saquon is getting going, if he can perform at a middle-class level, he doesn't have to be one of the high-end QBs of pro football for the Giants to win in this division. He has to merely not turn the ball over a ton and get the ball to the playmakers around him. If you look at it in terms of if it boils down to Giants and Washington's defense is probably the best in the division. And so that gives me some pause with basing it all around Fitzmagic, and that is the reason I'm going to downgrade them. So if it's the Giants and the Cowboys, the Giants have the better defense, right?
Without a doubt. The Cowboys have...
It's not a world-beater defense, but it's the second best in the division. I think that's fair to say.
I think the Giants defense is actually pretty good. I think it's going to be their strong suit as to why they... that's part of my brain is like if Daniel Jones is not playing, you know, not performing well, the Giants may just be like a ground-and-pound team and just they'll just shut you down with their defense. So, I mean, like it's... they show what they could do versus like Seattle last year and having Patrick Graham, who's a wizard, who thank you know, the Lord that he did not want to move on to a head coaching gig, wanted to stay with the Giants, and they added pieces and they're getting back some players at an edge rusher. I love the Giants defense for once. And they have a great secondary, which I think is going to a deep secondary, which is going to help out. That's the bright spot of the Giants team by far over the receiving core, over Saquon coming back. It's the defense. So I love the Giants defense. That's their key to the season. Not Daniel Jones. Their defense could be like top 3 to 5, in my opinion.
I know, but it's also, I think, like we talked about, the worst things that you can have on your team, the biggest gut punch to your team is a goalie who lets in soft goals in hockey, a place kicker who doesn't make kicks. But obviously, everybody understands quarterback's the most important position in sports. So if that guy's letting you down, if he's breaking your back with bad turnovers, I think that can really...
He's decreased his amount of turnovers.
Okay, I'm saying that's right. So at this point, I don't think he's ever going to be. Danny Dimes is never going to be.
That's fine. We can.
I find it hard to imagine.
I don't want to get into. It's going to be a 3-hour podcast if I'm going to get into.
I know
you calling Gettleman his errors, Saquon and Daniel Jones. I mean, if we want to get into the weeds of that, you could say every single GM's pick that was not the best part of their position is a bad pick. So it's like it's dumb. I don't agree with that your statement there, but I let it slide.
Because it's long in the rearview mirror now with Saquon. The mistake was obvious in the moment. I've never changed my.
It's a philosophical thing to say that you can't take running backs. I don't. In terms of the player, it's not a mistake.
No, what you can't take a running back is if you were as far away from being a Super Bowl contender as the Giants were when they took Saquon. I don't mind you doing it if you feel like we need a piece here and a piece there, and we really might have a path to get into the
Najee
Super
Harris
Bowl.
Najee Harris was a mistake.
You have
a miserable offensive line, so why take a running back?
Listen, we're not here to talk about Najee.
I'm trying to move off this topic.
At a later date, and you're trying to be a jerk with me, but I was not wrong, and I think the results speak for themselves. You know what? I have half a mind to just end it right here, but first, I want to get your thoughts on the Rangers dealing away Buchnevich.
It's a terrible trade because what everyone expected was, okay, they're moving him to gear up for cap space to not only get Jack Eichel, but then to extend Mika Zibanejad and bring in whoever else. And that did not happen as of yet. And it seems like Buffalo wants certain things and the Rangers want to give up other things and they're not going to meet at a middle point. So it seems like Jack Eichel will not be a Ranger. And it seems like we just gave away Pavel Buchnevich for really nothing, which stinks because not only did he finally emerge as a top player on the roster, but also was extremely well-liked by everyone. But the silver lining is that you couldn't really have him and pay him what he's going to command next offseason if you have guys like Kaapo Kakko and Vitali Kravtsov, who are their young future stars. He was just killing their ice time, and he had to be moved, and they kind of have a logjam that position at the wing. So I understand why they did it, but I think the end game, which was Eichel, that not happening, not coming to fruition, is not really sitting well with Rangers fans. So look, if Kako and Kravtsov are awesome this upcoming season, they both score 70 plus points. Then it's great, and the Rangers keep some cap space, and they can make moves, and they have some flexibility with the cap, which will increase with the TV deals. But right now, as we record this, it's very upsetting.
All right. Well, listen, I wanted to get that off your chest and not let us go too deep into the summer and the hockey offseason. We're very sad in Pittsburgh about the loss of Turbo Tanev, a great piece for a championship worthy roster. I don't know exactly what the Kraken are going to do with a fourth line guy who uses his speed to fly around recklessly. I don't know what that does for a mediocre team. But anyway, best wishes to Tanev, an enjoyable figure on the Penguins roster the last few years. And just to let you know, like, the Giants spaghetti at plus 440, I got to say, I do see some real value there. Washington at plus 270 to win the NFC East, and the Cowboys there at plus 105. Bet whoever you like. For now, I'm going to stick with my Cowboys pick, but it might change before the season kicks off. So there's good news there. But I do like the Giants going over there to it. But at plus 440, those are some nice odds you can get there. Bet it at FanDuel.com/-3. It's the word minus. It's the number 3. And I want to go on record here that I hope we can put this ugliness behind us and have a nice time in Vegas. But it doesn't sit well with me that when I say Saquon was a bad pick for the Giants to make 3 years ago, and it made no sense, that you come back at me with Najee Harris was a bad pick, is a weird, and says something dark about what's in your soul, that's what you feel you need to say back, that you have to respond in kind like that.
First of all, I'm pretty pro Steeler. A lot of people like to crush him. I'm still saying the Steelers are a double digit victory team this year. Number two, I'm a huge Najee Harris fan. The guy jumped over the entire Notre Dame defense when he was playing for Alabama, and I'm not one of these weirdos who's online and says, like, no, this is the exact way your team has to draft. You cannot draft running backs. You cannot draft guards. You cannot draft safeties in the first, like, all these rules are like only quarterback, only edge rusher, only left tackle. It's so stupid. And it's all like cyclical, and stuff comes around. So people who have like these hard and fast rules, like, you can't take Saquon was running back that like everyone watched in college. And then he's going to the pros. Everyone's like, I want this guy on my team. He's electric. And he has been electric when he's been on the field. So it's like, to me, it's a good pick. Najee Harris, the Steelers needed to fill the Connor hole. He was arguably the best running back in this draft. I'm a fan of the pick. I'm just showing you what could be said about people's philosophies of taking running backs. That's it. Lesson learned.
Eddie Spaghetti holding up a mirror. And maybe the man in the mirror doesn't like what he's looking back at. Powerful stuff, Eddie Spaghetti. Thank you for that. And also, screw. For the rest of you, though, we'll be back after the magical weekend in Las Vegas. Can't wait to get out there and hang out with all the Extra Points gang. You can hang out with the Extra Points gang whenever your ears are interested in doing so. You can download all the great shows from Extra Points, the show itself, on down with me and Cousin Sal. We have a best of up there for you to enjoy right now. Looking back at the past year, Lemon Pepper Parlay. We had the great Martin Weiss join us earlier in the week for some fun conversation about Team USA basketball and its sorry state. All the great shows. Track them down. We'll talk to you on the other side of the weekend. Until then, thanks so much, sports fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven, except for the part with Eddie Spaghetti. That was rude. And you may have just stamped your ticket to not heaven. How about that, Eddie Spaghetti, for being so mean? That's going to be a strike in the loss column when they look at your life resume. The guy at the gates or whatever, when he's checking, he's going to be like, you were rude to Dave that one time, and that wasn't cool. And so you better do something to overcome that in Las Vegas.